When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Past Lives podcast, episode 235, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. This week I'm talking to Stephen Cranston about his book, In Between Two Worlds, A New Approach to Mediumship. Stephen has been a medium since birth and has always been aware of the unseen world. He trained with the Spiritualist National Union. Steve is also known as the Soul Man and is one of Scotland's most respected mediums. Stephen owns and runs his business, The Soul Man and Friends in Broxbourne, and he also runs his spiritual training academy, the Soul Man Academy, and welcomes hundreds of students every year. Hi, Steve. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Thank you very much. It's really great to be here. Thank you.
I wanted to talk to you about your book. It's called In Between Two Worlds, A New Approach to Mediumship. And I was going to ask you, first of all, about when you were young, and you said that you kind of heard a sound that was like people whispering.
Yeah, the whisperers, I called it. So when I was very little, I remember lying in bed, or I would be out with friends or out with my parents and just hear whispering wherever I went, and wasn't quite sure as to what it was at the time because I was so young, and then realised that it was the spirit world at quite an early age, I would say.
So did you feel that everyone could hear it, like everybody around you, and that it's just normal for everyone?
Yeah, I was always very surprised when I found out that other people couldn't hear it. I would say to my sister, "Can you hear that?" And she would say yes, but I don't think she knew what she was agreeing to, you know, as siblings do. And later, when we'd had conversations about it later in life, she said that she didn't hear anything. But yeah, I was always very surprised as to why other people weren't able to hear and sense what I was.
You described it as kind of like a white noise, or the whispers of 100 people. So do you think there were that many spirits there?
I'm not quite sure of what I was tuning into at the time. I think that I was perhaps tuning into that dimension. And I guess, you know, when you tune into a radio and you can hear lots of different things in the background, I think that what I was maybe perceiving at that time was the radio station of the spirit world, so to speak.
So it wasn't like they were trying to communicate with you. It's almost like you were just a bystander at a big party.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how I would describe it. instead of them trying to say anything to me, it was more that I was just aware of that conversation constantly going on around me.
And you also saw shadows.
Yeah. So the whispering, I guess, came first, or perhaps at the same time as the shadows. But I remember being a very small child, and I would say even perhaps as young as being in my crib and lying back in bed and seeing these shadows around the bed and hearing the whispering. So it was almost like they were speaking about me, not to me. I knew at that point that these people weren't people who belonged to the rest of the family, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like an inner knowing that these were different.
Yeah, so it's like when you say they're not part of the family, not part of the family that are alive, but they could have been part of the family that are deceased.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess at the time, you know, on hindsight, you look back on it and you think, yeah, yeah, that's what it was. But at the time, I don't think you even really think about it.
Plus, you were very young at the time, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was normal to me.
But also, was it scary?
Not in the slightest. I don't ever remember being scared of them at all. There was always this feeling of love that came with that visitation, I guess.
Right, yeah, I see.
And I mean, that's not always the case, you know. There's been situations through life where the feeling of love hasn't been there and there's been fear there. But, you know, those moments when I knew that they were family members, it was love.
When you talk about how you would feel their breath on your neck and you'd hear footsteps?
Yeah, so that, I think that's in the first chapter that I speak about this man who lived or who had lived in our home. And that was the time where I was experiencing the footsteps and feeling the breath on my neck, feeling the very cold temperatures in the bedroom, you know, all of these odd sensations that weren't those sensations of warmth and love that came with the other whisperers.
So would you say that the temperature then is an indicator that it's somebody different?
Not always, no. That's the strange thing. You know, I know that I have a few friends who are paranormal investigators, and they always say that there's a temperature change when the spirit world are around, but I've not always been aware of that. I can't honestly say, hand on heart, that there's a huge temperature change whenever the spirit world are around. But I do find that there's a temperature change when it's someone that I'm not aware of who it is, if that makes sense.
And so do you get asked to go on paranormal investigations? Is that something you do?
I have done, yeah. I've done a few in the past. I find them wonderful and fascinating, depending on who's organising the event. I don't like, you know, the most haunted style where people are running, screaming through haunted locations. That's not really my style. I like to go out and investigate and find evidence, I guess, and to be able to correspond that evidence with the history of the building and, you know, the knowledge that people might already have.
So were your parents, like, aware of what was going on? Because I think you're saying the book, your mum told you that you would sit there holding out your hands to invisible forces and talk to people that weren't there.
Yeah, so my mum was very aware of what was going on. My dad was, but I guess my dad being your stereotypical man, you know, I don't believe in things I don't see, he kind of dismissed it at the time. But he speaks now about how he found it really frightening that I was holding my hands out to invisible forces. You know, he would be sitting, I would be in my high chair and speaking away to nobody that he was aware of, but he could feel a definite change in the room as well, which is interesting. And my mum was always very aware, but interestingly, what my mum didn't do is she didn't tell me, oh, that's the spirit world, or, you know, she just always seemed to be able to intuitively know what to say without, I guess, filling my mind with her beliefs or her thoughts.
Is it a thing, do you think, with some mediums that it's something you inherit? from your parents and it runs down family lines?
I don't think so, no. I think that we all have the ability to be able to connect. The reason being is that we're all spirit people here living a human life, and the only thing that's getting in the way is the physical body. So there's no reason why we can't all connect with that, but it's my belief that we are conditioned to believe that there's nothing there. You know, if you tell someone so many times that there's nothing there, then they start to filter that part of their reality out.
So is it then, over time, it was like there were the whispering sounds going on and you didn't quite, I don't know, connect with it, but then you started to realise that there were people there that looked and felt familiar?
Yeah, with my mum as well, she would say things like, when I was scared, for instance, I would say, "Mum, you know, there was someone in my bedroom." And she would say, "It's okay, darling, just tell them to go away," rather than, "There's nobody there." So she would keep my mind open rather than telling me that there was nothing there.
And did you find that if you did tell them to go away, they would go away?
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing, because so many people have these experiences, but they forget to speak out loud or to say the words, "Leave me alone."
So the spirits are, they're not like you see in the films where they're haunting and they could be quite nasty, or maybe they're just angry at something. If you say to them, "Go away," they go, "Oh, okay, yeah, fair enough."
So yeah, I don't think that it's like the films at all. I think that there's so much love in the spirit world. If you think about it, all of the people that we love that have passed to the spirit world, there's more love in the world than there is hate. How many times, Simon, in your day do you come across angry, hateful people? Probably pretty few and far between, would you agree?
Yeah, you go around your day-to-day life, you don't encounter people like that.
Yeah, and it's the same for the spirit world. It's very rare that I ever encounter people that are bad, nasty people in the spirit world. And I always say, you know, that we as people, we attract what we want to attract. You know, if you want to attract negative, nasty people into your life, you're going to have negative, nasty people physically in your life. And it's the same with the spirit world. You know, if you're looking for it, it's going to find you.
So it's kind of like you'd be a beacon in a way to attract whatever it is the way you are.
I would say so, yeah, yeah.
And so around this time, so when you were younger, you could see the spirit?
Everything happened in very different ways. I think as I developed as a human being, so did my awareness. And I speak about that in the book. You know, the first time that I was really properly aware that I was seeing the spirit world was when I was at school and the parents had went away and the grandparents and different people stayed behind, and these were spirit people. But at the time, I didn't really know that those were spirit people. And then it started to frighten me that I was seeing people in that way. So it's almost like that sense shut down on me.
You talk in the book about somebody called Richard at school that was playing by himself?
Yeah. So yeah, Richard, he was a young boy round about my age, maybe just a little older than me. And he was playing by himself, and he always seemed to be alone. But I guess at the time, you don't really think about that either, do you? You know, when you're playing with kids at school. It wasn't until I left school years later where the playground supervisor, I had met her and she'd said, you know, you were an interesting little boy. You used to sit and play on your own at the wall. And I'm thinking, I wasn't on my own though. I was with Richard. But then on hindsight, you know, nobody else could see him. Nobody else interacted with him. But at the time, I didn't look at it like that.
When you saw Richard then, I assume he was just looked like any other kid. It's because, you know, there's that idea that perhaps spirits would be transparent or there'd be a glow about them or something.
Yeah, he was as real as you and I. I don't remember him being see through in any way. I don't remember, you know, being able to pass my hands through him, or, you know, he seemed solid and real, which again sounds strange. but then, I mean, I had a visit from my granddad, and my granddad was exactly the same. I was able to touch my granddad.
Does it take a lot of effort for a spirit to materialize like that? Because it seems to me that if they could do that often and easily, then why don't they just do it all the time?
I know, I wish they would. It's happened at points in my life where, and I mean, you know, I'm 40 now, and it's happened twice. And I guess these are at memorable points in my life where things were happening in my life. So, you know, my granddaddy just passed away when I had that visitation, and with Richard at school, I guess I was experiencing lots of change and growth because I was growing up, and I was very aware that I was growing up. The way that I look at it is when there's these times of change, I guess that's when I've been aware of it. And I guess it really would take a lot of energy for them to do so, because it doesn't happen often.
Because I talked to a couple of physical mediums, and they've talked about how it takes ages for the spirits to kind of tune in to the energy of the room and the energy of the sitters, and that they use the energy of the sitters as part of their process. And it takes ages. You probably know better than me about mediumship, but I get the impression that it takes years and years for a physical medium to get to a point where they can manifest the spirit in any way.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with that. I know many physical mediums who sit for years and get very, very little results from it. And then there's people like me who are able to sense and feel a spirit person in an experience that takes 5 minutes. But then the way that I would look at that as well, Simon, is, you know, I have been aware and felt the spirit world my whole life. So why not? You know, I would say that that's as good a time as any, you know, all those years of that awareness of them being there. That's obviously why I've been able to feel them and experience them in that way.
When has anything physical ever happened with you?
Other than my granddad, he hugged me. I played with Richard in the school playground. And if I really look back on that with Richard, I guess there was never a point where I was physically touching him. You know, we never held hands or played in any way as a child with any kind of physical contact. So there wasn't the same experience that I had with my granddad, but he looked and appeared real, if that makes sense.
You say that, I think it was by the, like you were 9 or something, you were no longer seeing the spirits. You shut it off?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was mainly because it was frightening me, because I started to realise quite quickly that my friends weren't able to sense what I was sensing. And I guess when you're that age, 9 or 10 years old, you're feeling a little self-conscious because you're seeing and feeling things and your friends aren't.
I was interested to hear about the time you said you were at a bus stop with your granddad and you saw a ghost bus.
Yeah, that's when my granddad was still living. So we were standing at the bus stop waiting to go into town, and the bus very clearly was coming towards us. And it didn't look very old, I would say, but it looked an odd shape of bus. And in Edinburgh at the time, the buses were the, you know, the big red-looking buses.
Yeah.
So it kind of looked like one of these old London buses, which is quite a normal thing to see in Edinburgh. But as the bus came forward, the bus just disappeared, which I still have no explanation to this day. And it was a long stretch of road. So if the bus had passed, we would have seen it on the other side of the bus stop. But it wasn't there.
And you told your granddad about it?
Yeah. My granddad was always fascinated by the things that I said. He never really understood it, but he would speak about it, which was good.
You told him about the bus. Did you say you saw the number of the bus? And he said, oh yeah, that used to run here ages ago.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he'd mentioned about that as well. He'd said, you know, oh, that bus used to run here ages ago. And at the time, I didn't really think it was strange until you look back on it and then you think, wow, that was pretty strange.
And then you moved to a new house? Was it there was a weird feeling when you moved in?
Yeah, so when we moved to the house, we walked in the front door. It was my mum and I that went to the house first. And when we walked in, it just felt odd. The house felt strange. Now, I'd seen things in the house before we even moved into it, you know. And I'd said to my mum, I feel this house is quite, it just doesn't feel right. And my mum had seen someone at the bottom of the stairs. I'd seen someone at the top of the stairs. I'd seen someone lying at the bottom of the stairs. But I guess more shadows than anything else. Not the way that I seen my granddad. You know, it wasn't that physical form. It was more like a shadow.
And did you find it creepy? Did you think, I don't want to move in here?
Yeah. I said, I really don't want to move here. And I guess at the time, you know, I was young. Both my parents said, Stephen, we're moving. And I was annoyed because I was moving away from my friends. And so at the time, I was thinking all different things. So I just had to do what my parents told me to do. And we moved in. And that's when it started with this visitor.
Hello, Simon here. Every week I produce an extended episode of Past Lives Podcast, and these episodes can be 20 or 30 minutes longer than the 1 hour episodes. They contain amazing information from the guests. For just $5 a month, you can get access to the back catalogue of Past Lives Podcast extended episodes, as well as the weekly extended episodes. It's easy to sign up at patreon.com/Past Lives Podcast. The extended episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. The link is in the show notes.
Were you able to communicate with him? Perhaps ask him to move on?
No. So I would always be aware of him. I would wake up in the night and he would be standing at the top of the stairs, staring into my bedroom. He always gave me this terrifying feeling, which is quite strange because it was the first time I'd really felt anything like that. You know, the times growing up until that point, there was never anything that felt sinister.
And so over time, have you learned any kind of, I don't know, little rituals or something where you would put up a protection around you?
Since then, or at the time?
Yeah, I mean, because you've done a lot of training over time now, haven't you? Is this something that you would do before you start any session where you would just say a little prayer or something?
Yeah, so I always think everything's about intent, and I always ask, you know, if I'm opening up to that energy, you know, I only want to work with people who are kind people, who want to look after me, who want to take care of me, who are nice. You know, I don't want to work with energy that's negative in any way. I guess it's now like a muscle that flexes. I don't have to think about it too much. I don't ever come across anything negative. It's very, very rare. But and I guess that's because my intention is to always work with good. You know, it's like anybody, your intention is to go out there into the world and do a good job and be a kind person and be good to people. So that's what you do.
So can you tell us about Albany Street Spiritualist Church and how you got in there?
Yeah, so with Albany Street, I had went to have a mental health assessment done at the Royal Edinburgh Hospital. These two lovely nurses, and this all came as part of, so I had found my granddad dead in his house, and my granddad was there that evening when I found him dead, told me to phone an ambulance. So I phoned an ambulance and said to the operator, my granddad's dead. And they said, how do you know your granddad's dead? And I said, because he told me he's dead. So he was standing behind me telling me that he had died and I was to phone an ambulance. So I did that, phoned the ambulance. They came, and obviously as a result of that, I believe there was something triggered there to say this child needs help. And a few weeks later, I was at school and I had a bit of a meltdown with one of the teachers, got very upset. And from all of that, I then went and had this mental health assessment. Whilst I was there, the two lovely nurses asked lots of questions. We spoke for ages. And come the end of all of that, they said, we think that you need to look for a spiritualist. The local spiritualist church was Albany Street. And I'd looked it up in the Yellow Pages at the time because there wasn't phones or phones like we have them now. Walked in the doors of Albany Street and I felt this sense of belonging, this room of people who had all had or felt the same way that I did. I guess it was almost like coming home. That's a very long-winded answer to your question, Simon. Apologise.
No, that's what we like. Albany Street became, was it a place for you where you developed? Were you there, going there for years?
Yeah. I would go every Friday. I would be there every Thursday, every Friday, every Sunday. And I would sit in what's called an open awareness circle. That just helped me to develop what was already there. And then I done some accreditation. So basically like courses that they offered where I would go out and practice or learn the philosophy of spiritualism, learn the history of spiritualism, and then have the practice part of things as well, where I would go out and work alongside other mediums and deliver evidence-based mediumship across a public platform. But yeah, it was quite a journey there.
And you were quite young when you first did your first platform, wasn't it?
Yeah, I stood up there, I was 16 years old, and just gave what I got.
And by the time you were 20, I think you said in the book you had tons of experience, but you might turn up and people would look at you and think, well, he's too young to this.
Yeah. Even now they do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess I had been working for the spirit world my whole life, really. I had all this knowledge and understanding, but for me, it was always about getting up there and being able to give someone proof. I think that's what people found surprising, is that I didn't want to know anything. I would rather just turn up, do my work. And they always thought, he's really young. He's just a little boy. And I wasn't, you know, even when I was 20, I looked about 15.
But then I suppose they'd think that and they'd see you. But when you got up on the platform, your performance was like really good.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. I always think that if people can understand the information that I'm putting over, then I've done my job properly. I've listened properly.
So can you tell us about the sitting you had when you were sitting just one-to-one with somebody and you got a mental image of the Tasmanian devil?
Yeah, what that was is the lady had came in and she had asked for a private sitting, and I sat with her. The only thing that I could see was a Tasmanian devil. And with all of my training and all of my understanding of the spirit world, I was always told, just say what's coming to you. Say what you see, Stephen. And if you say what you see, then you're being true to the spirit world. So I said to her, can you understand why I'm seeing the Tasmanian devil? And the lady got up and she put her money for the sitting down and she walked out. And that was that. And I thought, how strange. I don't understand why she has just done that. And I guess I felt at the time, what have I done? You know, I thought I'd done something wrong. And it later turned out that that lovely lady had this password with her loved ones that when they passed to the spirit world, that they would use that code word, the Tasmanian Devil. And that is really all the proof that she needed.
So it was a kind of code word in a way, or password.
Yeah.
And do you think this kind of thing is useful? I mean, if somebody comes to you for a one-to-one sitting and they've got a code word and you don't say it, then they kind of discount everything you've said because they haven't heard the code word.
Yeah, that is really interesting, because I always say, you know, the code word's great, but a code word only depends on how well the medium's going to listen. If the rest of the evidence is there, then of course the person that's sitting in front of you will say, that was absolutely fantastic, but there's a code word. And I would, my reply to that, Simon, would be, all of the other evidence fits. It all makes sense. And I'm just really sorry that I'm not the medium that's able to get that password for you. And now that happens very rarely, but I always tell people as well, you know, have that password with your loved ones, because what better evidence is that?
Yeah, particularly for something obscure like a Tasmanian Devil.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got a password with my children, so they know that when I pass to the spirit world, that there's a password there. And if that password comes across, then that medium has worked really hard to get to that point.
So you talk in the book about the five Clairs.
Yeah.
Is that a thing where one of them or two of them are particularly strong for you, or are you able to work with all five?
I would say that every single person on the planet has these different clairs, because for me, if you think about it, like your five senses, you know, you can't drink a cup of coffee without smelling it and seeing it. If you close your eyes, the cup of coffee will taste better or different. If you hold your nose, it's not going to taste as good. The way that I see things, Simon, is that we use all of the senses when we're connecting with the spirit world. Some people may say that, you know, they're clairsentient, which is what a lot of people say. They say, oh, I'm clairsentient, I just feel things. But the truth is that people, they're clairabundant. They feel and sense with all of the senses. They just might need to fine-tune certain ones.
And if you have images coming to you, they come up in your mind's eye, in your imagination?
Yeah, that would be clairvoyance. Clairvoyance is the seeing things in your mind.
If you're sitting with someone and you get an image in your mind, is there a particular quality to it, so you can tell whether it's you, just like your imagination's making something up, or if it's coming from spirit?
Yeah, so when it's coming from the spirit world, it feels to me very abstract. It's like, I know it's not my own. It's almost like I'm watching a TV screen on the inside of my head. And interestingly, it always seems black and white. That's how I know the difference. Because I daydream and think in colour. And when it's the spirit world, it always seems to be black and white. And I don't know why that is, but that's just how it is for me.
Do you feel that for the spirits to communicate with you or with anybody, it's a real struggle for them? It's something they have to, because we talk about vibration, and they struggle to lower their vibration to our level.
I wouldn't say so. I think it depends on the person, and it depends on what their beliefs would have been in life. You know, so if you have someone who has a good understanding of how the spirit world operates, when they pass to the spirit world, it would be very easy for them to communicate with a medium, because their mind is very open to that, and that intention would be that, you know, they would be able to communicate after physical death. But if it's someone who doesn't have that belief system in life, I always think that it's harder for them to come through. And I found that more with people who you know, might have a really religious upbringing, or they just believe that when you die, it's the earth and the worms and there's nothing. I always find that those are the people who are hard, or it's harder to connect with them just because of their belief systems in life.
I read this really weird thing that happened to you in the book. I had to ask you about this. Was it you were crossing a road and then you found two tall men with dark glasses, with dark suits?
Yeah. So those two men, they were they appeared from nowhere. I was walking across the street with my friends after work, and I just felt this hand on my shoulders, hands on my shoulders. It was very strange for me because these men seemed to know who I was. And even now to this day, it still feels very strange to think, who were these men? But they obviously were something else, whether it be you want to call them angels or highly evolved spirit people or whatever. But I believe that they were angels.
And they communicate with you?
Yeah, they spoke to me on that day. Yeah.
And have you had other encounters with, what, I don't know what to call them, like beings that are not deceased people, like you say, angels?
Yeah. So the other time was I was at church with my wife. So my lovely wife is Catholic. We often go to masses at the church, and we were at a mass for the sick. The priest was standing, anointing people with the oil on their forehead. And there was this being. Honestly, Simon, up until this point, if someone had said to me, angels exist, I would have said, no, that's not right. I've never seen or experienced anything like that. However, on this day, this winged man was standing behind the priest. And, you know, just like you would see in the images on the stained glass windows, the big, blonde, very attractive person standing behind the priest, huge wings, 7 feet tall, with his hands on the priest's shoulders. In that moment, I said to my wife and my mother-in-law, there's an angel standing behind the priest with his hands on his back, on his shoulders. And my wife and mother-in-law says, stop it, you know, don't be ridiculous. And we had went through to the tea room afterwards, and the priest had came round, shook everyone's hand, and I had said to him, were you aware of what was going on there? And he looked at me and he says, ah, the angel, you mean? And my wife and my mother-in-law were absolutely astounded by it. They to this day, they still don't understand it.
Was it difficult for you to understand?
Yeah, totally. Because up until that point, you know, I'd been aware of the spirit world. And now I was a dad and I was married and things were different. And I didn't ever have any kind of interaction with angels. I couldn't not believe what I was seeing because it was right in front of me. So, and the confirmation came from the priest. And do you know, I would love to get that priest, because I know that he's still a priest, and I know that he actually lives down south now, but I would love to get him to talk to him about it again.
And you're not a Christian, is that right?
No, not at all. But I love all religion. I think that there's truth in every religion. I think that, which might sound crazy, you know, coming from someone who people would imagine that my belief would be a spiritual belief, but I believe that there's truth in everything. And I get a lot of peace sitting in these religious places.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When somebody comes and sits with you, if you're doing a one-to-one sitting, how much feedback do you want from them? Because I've heard a phrase that says, don't feed the medium, but also you've got to have some feedback, haven't you? So do you want it to be really limited so they don't interfere with your process, or they might give you too much information and then the stuff you tell them could be, you know, biased or something?
Yeah, absolutely. I always think that every medium should welcome conditions where they know nothing and where the sitter tells them no more than yes or no. I would actually prefer there to be a screen in between me and the person, but you know that's not right because it's not very nice, is it, sitting behind the screen? But I always think that the communication's better if we know nothing. With the greatest will in the world, when someone tells you something, your mind is going to start adding to that. So I always think that it's best to know nothing at all.
Okay, so the advice for the sitters is really just kind of yes and no. And if you say, oh, were they very athletic? And then the person says, oh, yes, they used to run the 100 meters and they used to swim and they got a gold medal for...
Yeah, we don't want that. See, if I'm sitting with someone and they do that, I would say to them, and usually it doesn't happen like that because I frame it up really well, but if they do that and they give me too much information, I would then say to them, you know, my job today, and I always say before I start any kind of reading communication with someone, I always say that quite simply what my job is to prove the existence of the human soul after death beyond reasonable doubt. And if you're telling me information, then there's reasonable doubt. You can walk away from today saying, oh, I told them that. So it's best that you say nothing. So in order for us to continue with this communication, you need to tell me nothing. And they're like, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
And usually don't say any more than that.
So during the book, there are these sub-chapters that are kind of, I don't know, you call them little training chapters for people where they can practice techniques?
Yeah. So they're these little sub-chapters, they're called Finding the Medium Within You. I really wanted to add those because I knew that as people were reading the book, they were going to start thinking about their own experiences. And that's certainly something, you know, when we had book being proofread by people, they were having these spiritual experiences as they were reading the book. So I wanted to put those sub-chapters in to help people to understand what these things were, what they were feeling and why they were feeling these things.
And it's advice on quieting your mind and being open to receiving information.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if we can quiet our mind and quiet our body, if we can be in the best place physically, emotionally, then we're able to connect better with the spirit world. At times where, you know, I've found that my mediumship's not been so great or I've struggled to make a connection is usually the times where I've not been looking after myself. You know, I've perhaps put on a little bit of weight or not sleeping well or, you know, maybe going through a time in my life where I wasn't emotionally in the greatest place that I could be. So these chapters were really to help people as well to understand that, you know, by looking after themselves that and quieting the mind, that they would be able to make a better connection.
And I wanted to ask you about the thing that happened when you were younger. You woke up and there was a woman kind of shaking you awake and saying, Stephen, go and wake up your mum. What happened there?
Yeah. So yeah, this lady I woke up, I don't know, early hours of the morning, and this lady was standing by the side of my bed, shaking me, physically shaking me. Go wake your mum up. And it was really urgent. So I went through and my mum wasn't there. She was gone, wasn't in bed. I thought nothing of it, went back to bed. I thought, you know, at the time, she could be at work, she could be wherever. Being a young lad at the time, you don't think of it in any other way. Went back to bed, fell asleep again. Again, this lady shook me to wake me. I went through. My mum was lying in bed at that point. And when I shook her, mum, she wasn't responsive. She wasn't coming to. So the more I shook her, the more worried I get. And then she took in this breath of air like she'd just came out of being underwater for 10 minutes. You know, this huge gasp of air, then told me to go back to bed. Go back to your bed. So I went to bed. In the morning, my mum had spoke about what had happened and couldn't quite believe what had happened at the time. But this little lady, I just didn't know who she was at all. You know, I didn't have a clue who she was. And then years later, my granny was quite ill a few years ago, and we found this photograph. One of our relatives had this photograph of my granny's mum, which was just crazy because the woman that was in the photograph was the woman who woke me up. The minute that I seen the photograph, I just, oh my God, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. And I said, that's the woman. That's her right there. That's her that shook me that night. And so she was my great-grandmother that I never knew.
And your mum, she was somewhere else, wasn't she? She was with her family?
Yeah. So she just remembers being in this really beautiful place. And she remembers being with my granddad when she was in that place. And my granddad kept saying to her, Heather, you need to go back. And he was pushing her back. And then the next thing, she woke up and I was there in front of her. But she just remembers being in this place full of love.
It's interesting that you went in there and she wasn't in the bed.
So I think, I don't quite understand what happened at that point. I don't know if that was, I don't know. I don't have an answer for it. I wish I did.
You talk about in the book how when you work with the spirit world, you have a full trust in them. Is that something that took time to develop?
Yeah, I would say so. Because obviously when you're experiencing things and feeling things, it's very hard to trust. Is that my imagination? Is it something else? And the more that I trusted the something else part, the better it was, the stronger it got.
And if you had all sorts of training when it comes to doing mediumship?
I would say that, most of my training was when I was going through my training in Albany Street and out with. But I would say that I've probably found my way as a medium on my own. And I always think, you know, in any learning that anybody does, you're only as good as your teacher. And I was always fascinated why the teachers around me would, I don't know, be perhaps jealous of other mediums, or there was always something else that felt not quite right. And I think that that's just human beings, you know. Human beings can be jealous people, or perhaps not jealousy, perhaps they want to be seen as better, or I don't know. But I always found it quite fascinating why there was this barrier, you know, like you can't do great things or you can't be that. I always remember people saying to me, you'll never make an income being a medium. You'll never be able to do this as a job. And I always found that fascinating because I thought, this takes a lot of work, a lot of hard work to do this work. So why is there this mentality of lack around it? And I guess that's the other side of mediumship that people don't see. I'm going down a leafy lane with this one, haven't I?
This is fascinating. It's, you know, it just shows that people are just people no matter what they're doing. So
yeah,
when you got, as you've got older and you've become more mature, do you find that your mediumship has changed, or you're still doing what you did years ago?
I definitely think my mediumship has changed. I would say that every year, every day, I develop my awareness is more acute, and it changes all the time. You know, there's I couldn't sit and say that I am this type of medium, because much like in life, we develop and change at different rates, you know, and the people around us change as well. The circumstances around us changes. Everything changes, and everything's always changing. And I think when you can accept that, that change is a huge part of life, then yeah, it's a good thing. And it makes you the best person you possibly can be.
And your skills and opening yourself up and connecting with spirit, it seems like when you were younger, that was just wide open. But now, have you got a technique where you can kind of switch it on and switch it off?
Yeah. So again, it's about intent. So when I'm working, I know that it's on. And when I'm not working, I know that it's off. And that's something that I always found fascinating as well, Simon. People would say, you know, you have to open up and close down. And I guess that's where my new approach to mediumship comes in, because if my intention is to work, then of course that's what I'm going to do. If my intention is not to work, then that's what's going to happen. It doesn't have to be that we have to have this ritual of closing our mind down and opening our mind up.
So it's not like you can be in Tesco and then you suddenly get this feeling, oh, I've got to give a message to that woman over there who's doing her shopping.
No, because that's so irresponsible. That's something that I speak about in the book as well. You know, it's why on earth would I ever want to do that?
Yeah, I suppose it could be considered kind of showing off, almost like, hey, check me out, see what I can do.
The way that I see it is that people have got free will. And if someone's coming to them and saying, I have a message for you from your dad or your mum, you're interfering with that person's free will. That person feels obligated to say, oh yeah, just tell me. I always remember when I was very young, having an experience where I guess I was young and silly. That goes with this whole, as we grow, we get better, don't we? And I was in Asda, and I said to the lady at the checkout, I'm aware of your dad. And the lady thanked me. I'd gave her a message from her dad, and she was crying, she was upset. And I thought, this is great, I've nailed it, this is brilliant. She was really upset by it, and I couldn't understand why she was upset about it. She said to me, if I want to have a reading, I will go and seek that. I didn't want that. And how dare you interfere with my free will like that? How dare you do that to me? Words to that effect. And it's always, always, always been something that's stuck with me, Simon, because I forced that upon that lady, and I should never have done that.
If somebody wanted to have a sitting with you, do you still do that? Have you got a website?
Yeah, so our website is thesoulmanscotland.com. They can have a sitting with me. Right now, I think we've got, where are we, October, November, December? I think there's like a 5-month wait for a sitting with me. But we have got loads of really wonderful team members in the shop as well who do the same work as I do, but obviously they don't have the same experience that I have.
And do you do this over Zoom?
Yeah, we can do it over Zoom as well, yeah.
Okay, and the book we've been talking about is called In Between Two Worlds, A New Approach to Mediumship. And that's how people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yeah, Amazon. They can also buy it in the shop if you're up here in Scotland. And Amazon all over the world, actually. And we've just found out that our book is listed in one of the big American bookshops. I think it's the biggest American bookshop there is. And the name of it totally escapes me.
Okay. So, do you have plans for another book?
Yeah, I'm actually writing it just now, which is very exciting.
Ah, excellent. Well, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast. It's been fascinating talking to you.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you very much, Simon.
And that was an interview with Stephen Cranston about his book, In Between Two Worlds, A New Approach to Mediumship. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And the Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. And I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. And I've also added a new tier to the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign, where for $12.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Past Lives Podcast extended episodes. And including the Alien UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.